Welcome to Dial M for Maple, the AV Club's deep dive look at Riverdale. Today we're turning back the clocks to the early 90s for the Midnight Club. I'm your host, AV Club Senior Editor Mara Eakin, and I'm joined as always by Cameron Sheets. Cameron, hi.
Hey, totally rad.
And now, I wish they would have used the 90210 thing.
Yeah, we got to talk about the music they use because it's pretty exclusively 80s.
Their timeline is a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, this whole app, I think. Let's get right into it. It's time for our ice puncher, which is how we open each week's episode.
Sure.
If we get another flashback up in the future, what part of their lives do you want to see?
I wrote this down and I didn't even think about it yet. Do you have one?
The initial one that comes to mind is Penelope's awful storyline, which is basically she was purchased from an orphanage
to be
Jason's bride as a child, I guess like a six-year-old.
Yeah.
Which I guess explains why her last name is Blossom.
Right. I remember that being the thing leading up to this. We're like, wait, so she's a Blossom already?
That being said, like, I don't think Riverdale would do that justice. It's basically like a real fucked up movie.
Oh my God. It'd be really dark. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Lifetime story.
I think mine would be, I want to know, we know what Alice as a serpent is like kind of in the school setting, but I want to like see her serpent upbringing. I want to see.
That's a good point.
Her running around with like young Penny Peabody, if that.
I mean, that's what we really need to know is like the Penny Peabody backstory. Like what happened?
And like, I want to see a young Hawkeye and a young tall boy.
Yeah. The tall boy as a boy. The tallest boy.
The tallest boy. Yeah. In school. What if he wasn't? What if he had puberty late and it was like the joke that he was tall boy and then he grew into it?
Like, that's probably it. That must have been what happened.
Alice the Serpent passed. Give me more of that. Definitely. Well, speaking of Alice, this episode, kind of as we were pondering, you know, we have like the framing device of this flashback story is Alice finally telling Betty what the deal is.
Yeah. I will admit I was like 90% watching this. Like I was kind of doing something else, but I found it to be very confusing. Like the whole app, like I was kind of like, is Alice like embellishing here? Or people would be like, no, I didn't even see this. And then like, is she like remembering incorrectly?
Yeah.
Like it's definitely through her eyes.
It definitely is. And I was kind of forgetting that early on. And then you get like, the moment after they've had their fizzy rocks and everyone's going wild and she's getting these like, it feels very like sense memory, like hallucination. Like, what was actually going on?
Yeah. And then there's like just things that they drop that make like no sense where they're like, oh, you made out with Fred.
That really threw me off because it doesn't matter at all.
It's like they just wanted like Lily and KJ to kiss.
Yeah. Again. I was really confused about that.
It's so strange.
I mean, Betty's reaction to it is funny. And she's like, wait. And that's like how we reacted to it. And she's like, it doesn't matter. And then you're right. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And why she wouldn't just like go, oh God. Anyways, not to skip to right to the end of the episode.
Well, sure. But.
But why Alice is on like, hey, Hal Cooper, not like, hey, Fred. I don't know. Anyways.
Did you notice that the first time we see any of these characters in the episode, most of the time it is like we do get their full name. Just so it's like, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
KJ is playing a young Fred Andrews. Which I, sure.
I liked, hopeful. One thing I will say about Zep, you know, hopping all over the place, is I liked the little affectations that the younger actors picked up on.
Me too.
Like there were some ways that Luke tells jokes that KJ would kind of do, or Lily's sort of like thrown off Majin things, like the little strings of hair that Cole Sprouse had as a Skeet Ulrich.
Incredibly well styled, all of it. Yeah, I felt like, I kind of think that Cole did the best job in terms of like impersonating.
He did like some rubbing his eyes stuff that I was like, good, subtle. I like it.
It was like physical stuff and it was subtle movements that really sold it for him. But yeah, the hair was great too.
Because I had read or heard that Lily had been like watching Twin Peaks, like trying to pick up on like some Shelly motions from Majin. And I sort of saw it, but not really. So.
Yeah. I mean, she looks. I thought the look was like spot on, but you don't necessarily.
She definitely had the best
outfits. Oh my God, definitely the serpent stuff. She had like the kind of like floral kind of sheer shirt she was wearing at one point. This is all before they end up in their like Griffins and Gargoyles gear.
That 90s thing where you can always see like pantyhose out of the top of her jeans, which is just like, okay, sure, why not? And like lace gloves and like the little motorcycle caps. Great looks.
Yeah, absolutely. Alice kind of sets the scene early on. I was confused. I was like, is this the 80s end because of the music? But Alice does set the scene with her VO, which is very Jughead VO in my mind, the way she kind of like makes things a little fancier than they were. But let's hear her initial setup of the story.
It was our junior year. Phones had cords, Winona had Johnny, and everything smelled like teen spirit. The world was a different place, and we were very different people. Back then, I was Alice Smith, a bad girl from the wrong side of the tracks, with enviable hair, no real friends, and one huge problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, just kind of a funny way to set the scene. Phones had cords, Winona had Johnny.
So we're talking, I mean, it seems like early 90s, right?
I think so.
That what we're talking about? Like pre-grunge,
mm-hmm.
but like around then, like singles era? I don't know. I guess that's grunge.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she brings up teen spirit. What year did...
Teen spirit was like 91.
91. So yeah, super early 90s then. So some of the 80s stuff makes sense. I mean, we just recently went to a Saved by the Bell event at like the Max pop-up restaurant, and... that is a show that kind of bridged the gap between late 80s, early 90s, very much so. And I think there's parts of what the show was. I mean, definitely the title card, which I thought was incredible, was like trying to replicate that.
I think it makes sense because do the math. Like you're talking about 15-year-olds, it's 2018. So they would have been born in like 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Count back a little. You're saying, okay, so their parents had them around like 25, 26 years old.
Unless we're talking Alice, who had Chick very young.
Yeah, well, that's why he's like 20 or whatever now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's how it works out.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. So basically everyone's in detention.
Yes.
And Anthony Michael Hall is the sadistic principal who's never around.
Yeah. I mean, he really has one scene of dialogue, it feels like.
I'm extremely thankless role for him.
I mean, he kind of gets to do the principal Vernon Breakfast Club speech at them where he's like, no moving. I don't remember all of it, but even the way he like kind of enunciates certain words is like supposed to be riffing on that for sure.
I know. And like the stuff behind him on the board, like he's got it.
Yeah, he assigns the essay. And then of course they get in a fight. After playing Secrets and Sins, which I thought was a fun callback, they get in the fight and then he comes back and then it's like, okay, it's another 4 weeks for you guys, which is, of course, the big Breakfast Club moment where...
they're in Saturday detention for life. The Secrets and Sins thing is always such a little bit of a mindfuck where it's like, why are you telling strangers that you were basically brought out of an orphanage at 6 years old?
Yeah, it took no pressure from anyone. They just immediately gave that all up.
Yeah, it's not really truth or dare. It's just like, tell us your dirtiest secrets.
Yeah, and that was like, that was the first one too. So later on, I think some of the narration is like, we were bored and desperate for, I don't know, but like that first, they just are immediately like, here's everything about me.
Yeah, my dad hits me.
And I mean, it's fun in a very like obvious hit you over the head way how Fred is like, oh, you know what? It's not bad in Riverdale. I could even be mayor one day. And then Sierra's like, that sounds bad.
I do think it's fun. Like at the beginning of the episode, I was sort of like, this is fun. Mm-hmm. Like they're all having such fun with it. Like you could tell they had fun with the script.
The performances. Yeah, they had
but
a great time.
But then it just like spins into this. Like they got stuck being like, yeah. And then we'll cast every single actor as themselves. Mm-hmm. And like, we'll build all this weird storyline and they all have to be doing crazy stuff all the time. And it just turned into a bit of a mess.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun at the beginning because it's like, whether these aren't the normal characters we're following as, you know, in the present timeline, but to like actually see them in school and interacting and kind of like ribbing each other. It's like, yeah, these are like actual teens having a good time here. And you definitely do see like the actors having a good time doing it.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, Cheryl is really funny. Or I'm sorry, Penelope, as played by Madeline. Like, so funny. They're, she's dancing later to the Fredheads and is doing this completely insane thing. And she's got her braces. Like, what a performance.
I know. And I do like kind of finding out how they all ended up where they ended up. Although the reason that happened to all of them is a little specious to me.
Yeah.
But I like... you know, Cammy's Hermione being like, you know, he's a provider.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 blah. Like
kind of defending
thing.
Him already, right? Yeah.
My mom doesn't want me to be with him, blah, 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 Mia. You know, and then he's going to get out there and do what he needs to do.
It's weird because she does, it's set up that she already has that attraction to him. And then as they get really into the game, that's when she and Fred become a thing, which we've heard about in the past. But
and her and fucking Reggie are making out during like the drug freak out.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, in a way, I was like, oh, there they are. Mm-hmm.
The couple, like, the real life couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's just like I was constantly like, why are they, what's going on over here now? Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Everyone kind of loses themselves in that moment and it like almost doesn't matter. Well, so something else that happens, actually, I really like when they start playing the game, and this kind of goes back to like them just kind of having fun and letting their personality shine. I did want to play the soundbite where they're picking their characters when they first start to play.
Let's.
First, pick your characters.
I pick the sorceress. Maybe I can make all you nerds disappear.
I pick the thief. I've always wanted to be free of moral reasoning.
Well, as the voice of the people,
I choose the siren.
Deadeye. Sick.
Fred, we all know you're the Radiant Knight.
Clinging to the ideals of hope, justice, and righteousness. I don't know, it seems kind of
perfect boring. For you.
Yeah, so just really funny to me how it kind of all fits their personalities. Definitely best part was FP picking Deadeye, and he just goes sick. Really, really good. And then pretty soon after that, they decide that they want to start taking this off the board game. And like somehow, even though she just came up with the idea, Penelope has hidden stuff around the school for them.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I feel like I need to watch it again to be like, wait.
Yeah. No,
because she's also like saying she's hidden stuff around school for them.
Yeah.
But she also hasn't done any of this stuff. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like how'd the game get there?
The game. Yeah.
Like how is everything set up for them?
No, that's a great point. I think she was doing it all herself up until the point where they get the invitations to the Ascension party. And that happens like after this group has met up with the other group, which is young Tom Keller, young Hiram.
Young Dilton.
Young Dilton's father, Dilton Sr.
Yeah, I think it's like, he has a name in the show, but I can't remember what it is.
And same with Reggie's dad.
Yeah.
Something Mantle, but
yeah.
They're there. And so they all meet up.
Kevin's like little bandana. It's like, oh man.
Yeah.
So 90s.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, it's super funny. I think maybe also, let me say this. I don't play these types of games.
Sure.
So I'm like, how can you have a quest that they just like randomly set up? Like, how is it going to be accomplished? Like, I don't understand these kind of games where it's like, I'm going to roll a dice and see if I win the battle. Like, you know, hit me. I guess if you're a D&D fan, like tell us. If this holds true to how those kinds of games are played.
That's a great point. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm pretty certain no one that plays D&D is drinking like poison lace Kool-Aid, but.
Yeah, but like the previous parts. Let's see if that was all up. Like, can you take your D&D quest like off the board?
I think it just depends how much you want to get into just having fun and role-playing and acting things out, but you're still like beholden to the dice and the board. I don't know. Never played.
Yeah.
Wow. We got to get an expert in here.
Danette plays D&D.
Ugh. I'll have her back and ask. We'll ask her about it. Our resident D&D expert. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. Things start to go off the rails, and we don't really know who's doing it, and we never find out.
Let's come back. Let's take a break, and we'll come back and talk about the Ascension party.
Yeah, sounds good.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We have jumped around just as much as this dang episode, but maybe let's focus in on the Ascension party.
Yeah.
Basically, they're creepy notes sealed with wax in their lockers that invite them all to this Ascension party. And so they go, there's like, you know, orange soda and pizza, and it's all set up and they're like, let's do it. And Cheryl, Penelope is the dungeon master.
Yeah.
And Hiram has brought some drugs, and it's, you know, basically pop rocks, but it's drugs, which is a nice nod to Jingle Jangle.
Yeah, definitely.
And they all do them except for Alice, because Alice is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like super fucked up.
Yeah, and a really weird, like running around the school cackling.
Yeah.
Really creepy.
Yeah, and then... But first, the Fredheads played Dream Warriors.
Yeah, that was a weird moment.
I texted you and was like, is this song supposed to be bad? Like, is it like the song in A Star Is Born where you're like, oh, this is cheesy? Like,
why did you do that to me? I mean, first of all, Why Did You Do That is a great song. And I just implore you to listen to it on Spotify at all times because it's perfect. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. It just feels really weird. I mean... Like, I guess I get thematically why they wanted that song, but I don't think that the band really pulls it off, does it justice.
Who knew that, like, Alice plays keyboards?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And FP plays drums?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Well, this is where it's like, okay, if you really look at the logic, does any of this make sense? Because they're all of a sudden, they're this band, the Fredheads, which we were told earlier in the episode that these people didn't really know each other beyond, like, FP and Fred. And so it's like, this was the band, but...
But the Fredheads have, like, been canon in the past, right? Like, it's been mentioned as, like, oh, we had this band, the Fredheads.
Fred has brought it up. But if...
But if this is the only time that band ever played...
Yeah. And you kind of, like, we've been hinted at the fact that the parents have this, like, rich history together.
Mm-hmm.
But this episode shows some of that. But it's also, like, showing that it's all happened within this very specific window of time when they're playing this game.
Yeah, like a month or two.
Because they didn't know each other, and then they completely forgot about each other after all the shit went down.
Like, intentionally.
Yeah. Really interesting. They all became monsters, as Alice says. Let's play this little bit of soundbite from her VO.
But to this day, I wonder what was in those drugs. Maybe whatever turned us into monsters.
Kudos on the whole Ascension party thing. Very rad.
Me? I thought you did all this. It was set up when I got here.
Or maybe we've been monsters all along.
I mean, that's one of those moments where I'm like, wow, she's talking just like Jughead would when he's narrating things. It's like, but maybe we were the monsters.
Yeah. I mean, Alice is like a real ham.
Oh,
like,
she totally
we've known
is.
Her to be a ham time, you know, like a like an overly dramatic person.
Mm-hmm.
On some ways, you think like, has the farm changed it? But no, it hasn't. It hasn't changed her soul.
No, you can't change someone's soul. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about everyone going crazy. She kind of hides herself in the bathroom, finds the chalices. There's all the writing on the walls.
Which, like, did that show up, like, while she was in the stall throwing up?
I guess
so. Or, like,
so?
Did she just run into the bathroom and didn't see it, and then it came out and it was all over the walls?
I don't know. It's all very, very foggy.
So kind of, like, that's to me where it felt like, is Alice remembering this right? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally. Maybe she did do the drugs.
She takes off. She leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, doesn't hear from anybody for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And then what happens is the principal disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning she sees Hermione and she's like, Hermione, what happened to you guys? Where'd you go? And Hermione's like, you didn't hear? Fred's dad died and he wasn't there. So does Fred not find out about it until he gets home and finds his dad dead? Does he get beeped?
Oh, yeah. He's not going to get a text because
this
is the 90s. Hmm. I don't know. Yeah, good point.
I mean, but, I guess it must be because Fred's mom's not around.
Oh, God, who is? Yeah, we didn't hear anything.
Who
about
does he
that.
Stay with? Like, he's 16 years old. Like, he doesn't just. Yeah.
Also, where's Mary? But.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're to assume that that happens not long after Alice leaves. So then that leaves Featherhead alone in the school with the Gargoyle King.
Mm-hmm.
And he maybe sees the chalices and just out of curiosity.
In the women's restroom?
Yeah.
Maybe he's looking in there for everybody?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, why would you drink out of it?
And then...
Like, does he flip the coin?
I don't know. yeah, was he like, oh, this looks fun, mm-hmm. puts the crown on and starts playing.
I mean, I guess I see him maybe like running, like going to every room looking for the kids and like looking in the women's restroom and saying, yeah. like, hey, what's this? But it is weird. Like, I kind of feel like he must have been forced to drink the Kool-Aid, yeah, as it were.
As it were, right. I guess he did. I guess he drank it. And then the Gargoyle King shoves his body in the...
Yeah. Isn't there a point in that same kind of scene, though, where they're like, no, Alice, like, that didn't happen or whatever. And I can't mm-hmm. tell if that's them being like, it didn't happen, Alice, wink, wink.
Oh.
Or if it's like... Are you remembering this right? Like, we were there with you or whatever.
Yeah, you were thinking about this episode in a way I didn't. And it's smart because it's like we are getting all this through Alice's point of view. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just took everything we're seeing literally. And it doesn't have to be the case.
Yeah, I think maybe I need to go back and figure no, this but all that's out. But like rewatch it again with like really like eagle eyes. Mm-hmm. I think it is like just such of a mess of an episode. And I'm really interested to see... to go back and read LaToya's review too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is, it's one of those, it's a tough one to talk about because it is still really fun in a lot of parts, but
it's super fun.
But messes can be fun.
I know. And I enjoy the beginning. And then mm-hmm. I think it just gets like, I mean, it is sort of tinged, I guess, by the fact that it is all insane. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
That the game makes no sense. That like, there's like now this weird, like supernatural shit happening that like, fucks with your perception in general, mm-hmm. like, so that would guess would kind of make sense that the episode might not make a ton of sense.
Yeah, I mean, okay, well, the very final scene I cringed at. Did not like that.
You texted me because I texted you like 9 minutes into the app and was like, this app is crazy.
Yeah,
and you were like, are you at the end yet? And I was like, no. And you're like, it's a big mess. And so I was like sitting there waiting, like, because Benny was basically like, you know, checking out the mm-hmm. windowsill. I'm like, is this the end?
Yeah.
And then I finally saw
her going into the bunker, mm-hmm. happening upon the serpents. Jughead is like full Ethel, like all in on the game, at least the way he's talking about it.
They are playing it.
Let's hear that sound bite real quick.
Jug, what are you doing?
Betty, it's all making sense. All of this is becoming clear. The game, the Gargoyle King. I'm a level 3, and it's only a matter of time until I ascend. And I get to meet him.
I don't know. I mean, this is, in my mind, this is frustrating because Jughead is smarter than this and is so self-aware and like wouldn't let this happen to himself. But
maybe he thinks that like playing the game will help him solve the mystery?
Yeah, but the way he's talking about it there, it's like, oh, fuck, we lost him.
He went crazy. Which I guess is like what's supposed to happen to you, like what Alice says happens to you if you play the game.
Mm-hmm.
But is everybody else like this or just him?
I don't know. And I'm thinking back to the Fizzy Rocks thing and Jingle Jangle. It's like, are those connected in some way? Is there is there something chemically going on with the people that are playing this game for some reason before they even drink from the chalice that is like... I don't know how or why, but like, I just don't buy that. Like, logically, Jughead would buy into the game like that.
Maybe something's getting pumped into the bunker.
It could be.
Maybe certain people are just more susceptible than others. Because like all the serpents are playing now. You know what I mean? Like, and these like kids in the diner are playing, and like, is everyone like coked out on this game?
I mean, it could be. And I'm thinking back to Hiram with his fizzy rocks. He's the one that had the fizzy rocks, and we know that he's got some big plans for the time. I mean, this is absolutely insane, but is he like somehow contaminating air or water or something with something that's in those drugs, and that's what's making people extra susceptible?
I think maybe. I don't know.
I mean, that's insane, but it's not something the show the show's done more insane things, so.
Yeah, because there is that like where it looks like the show's kind of introducing supernatural stuff,
yeah,
but that's never happened on the show to date.
Right.
Like that happens in Greendale.
Right.
So is someone just like messing with the town? My initial reaction was that it was Curdle, you know, like something, you know, that was my dad or, you know, that was my, you know, real dad, the principal or whatever. Cause it's always like some old creep.
Yeah.
Old, quote unquote old, i.e. like my age, that is somehow involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man.
Let's take another quick break. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay, cool. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we're back. I mean, trying to make sense of the Midnight Club. I mean, I've been wanting this flashback episode for so long, and it was fun. It was satisfying in that sense, but it's kind of one of those things where they showed us a bunch of stuff and we didn't really get any more answers. It just made things more confusing.
No, and like, for instance, like, this is the episode we've been wanting where we figure out like the phallus backstory, yeah. Right? And they're like, he was my kryptonite. He was mm-hmm. the big man on campus, blah, 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 blah. Like, he played football and he was really a Southside Serpent, and they were having like hot sex, like in a locker room, yeah. It seems like.
Oh, yeah.
And she's knocked up with this kid. That's like their whole backstory. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, again, like 2 months of backstory.
Well, right. And it's weird because, I mean, her specifically, this happens and she's like, well, I don't know. Why does she decide that she needs to pretend to be preppy to get to trick Hal into like thinking this kid is?
I know. And then like, why is FP? Because like when she's with Hal, like he'll sort of be like, hey, Alice.
Yeah. Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But then he like tried to kiss Veronica.
Yeah. I mean, they the definitely game? Try and play him off as like he was a huge, huge player.
Or that he just didn't really appreciate her.
But then all of that, right, doesn't really make sense now in the present timeline where it's like, so they have this deep connection when really all it was they like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I really think that they got themselves like that. They were like, we're going to try to solve everything one episode. And they like just it got to be too much. Like everyone has to have a storyline and everything has to make sense. And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
it just got to be too insane.
It's clever to a certain extent. And it's like well thought over in some ways. But then it's like, yeah, but you're answering these questions, but not in a way that's you're not poking holes in other things.
I mean, let me say this. Riverdale has never been a show that's beholden to a timeline.
Sure. Of course.
They were like, this has all happened in 2 months. Like right. Jason's killer or, you know, whatever. They're still at sophomores or, you know, I guess now they're juniors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I think that's why I get so excited when in that other episode, they're like, it's been 3 weeks that's passed. I'm like, wow, a hint as to like where we are in the world. Like, thank you.
It's helpful to have that. You know what I liked this episode? The costumes.
Oh, yeah. Everything was great.
They look fucking like that cool like crown thing that Betty, Alice is wearing when like and Jughead's got that crown and like they're all like walking in the halls. Like that's why they're using those photos for like the promos. I'm like, they look amazing.
Because it's so fun.
Like, like Hermione's big glasses and
Yeah. But even when they're not in their like G&G, like I really like the way that Hiram is styled. Oh, which by the way, Michael Consuelos, like pretty funny, like not much to do. But
not much to do, but looked just like his dad.
He really does. It's wild.
And
congrats.
Like AJ's Luke Perry hair, pretty solid.
Yeah. I mean, and I really liked everything that, Sierra was wearing. Ashley Murray is a young Sierra. Like I really liked her style and this is really funny.
I thought it was so funny that she was like the activist. She was like end apartheid. First of all, was that in the early 90s? I don't know.
I thought it was a little bit later.
Our timelines are a little rough.
Yeah, we're just blurring all
Mandela
these years together.
I'm gonna Google it right now.
This story takes place simultaneously in 88, 91, 95.
Apartheid ended in theory in 1989.
Okay.
Sure.
There's your, thanks. There's the
well,
fact of the day.
Well, it kind of like really came to the end in early 90s. So I guess the timeline works.
Yeah.
I guess.
91. It's probably 91. Right?
Early 90s and a series of steps that led to the formation of a democratic government in 1994.
Oh my God. I just remembered the flashback I want. It's like, I want to see young Nana Rose. I want to see young Rose, like the pre-Nana days.
Yeah, is that Clifford's mom?
Yeah.
It has to be.
Before she was Nana, there was.
Oh, no, now I don't like Nana Rose as much.
Oh, yeah. Because that means
awful.
She
went to find a small redheaded daughter that she could then marry to Jason.
Maybe she didn't know this was happening.
Oh, she knew.
Oh, no, don't ruin Nana Rose for me. If that's the case, then this is the worst episode ever. No. We've definitely talked a little bit about some of these questions we have, but I think no better time than now to pop into the speculation booth.
Cameron, there are so many questions from the speculation booth, which is where we pop a squat to run down all of our theories for what lies ahead. First question on your list here is, was that the same Gargoyle King we're seeing now? Like same guy, same costume?
Yeah.
I think it's gotta be the same costume.
It looks the exact same. I mean, I'd remember that look anywhere, as I've said many times.
I will really say stylish. It's not necessarily the same person. It could be sort of like a dad.
Yeah, is like this like a generational like a mother son? Thing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, found this costume in the garage. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like last season where, like, okay, there's the Black Hood now and there are these murders back then. Are they the same? Is it like some older dude that's mm-hmm. doing this, or is this like a generational group thing?
I guess to play on that, who wanted to kill one of these kids? Was it someone in the group?
Yeah.
Is that what we're supposed to believe?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I mean, that's really weird.
And then how did someone... Did they want to kill the principal, or is it just an accident?
I don't know. And I think that's the big question about the Gargoyle King in general, is that, like, I kind of see this threat as, like, whatever is going on is this Gargoyle King is, like, happy to, like, kill whoever they mm-hmm. can and, like, loop people into this weird culty game world. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a specific target.
So at the time, was it like, oh no, we killed the principal, we got to put this game away?
Yes, and that's another big question. It's like, why does this disappear for so long? I mean, yeah, they said they scattered the pieces, but...
But yeah, was that the only copy of the game? And like, couldn't the Gargoyle King have kept it going?
The Gargoyle King's like, God damn it, I got this whole outfit together. I only got to wear it once.
Like, yeah, like, why was he freaked out by the principal dying too?
I don't know.
So couldn't have just kept it going?
Yeah. It's really weird. Where did Ben and Dilton find it again? I mean, I think we don't really know anything about Dilton's personal life or his father. Like, maybe he kind of seems like the type of guy that would have got really into it and been like, man, remember the good days when we had the game? Because that's probably the only time any of those kids gave a shit about him.
And I'll say also Dilton's like a creep, right?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
He could have just like found this bunker and the game was in the bunker, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he could have just been digging around a garage or like a yard sale or something and found this game, you know?
Yeah.
And then that kind of feels also like, if you're going to find someone that's susceptible to like extremes, placing mm-hmm. it in front of Dilton is pretty smart.
Yeah, absolutely. So somebody knows that he's a real dunce. It was yeah. like, this is our weakest link. Like, this is our in.
And Ben and like yeah. Ethel. Yeah.
Kids that just want to be popular and now it's caught on with everybody.
Yeah. Mm.
I think a lot of people were also like, if they all made this pact together, why wasn't Reggie's dad and Dilton's dad in that meeting the other week? But I just think that's like the show being like, well, we don't have actors for that. Like, we're not going to put them in here. But there are people like, did they die too? And I think that that's thinking into it too much.
I wonder if Dilton's dad's like actually dead already. Do
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like, maybe he's not around.
Well, it didn't seem like there was anyone to grieve him when he died. So
no.
It very well could be.
Yeah. That kid just disappeared.
So sad.
I know. And then Reggie's dad is very busy as a used car salesman or a non-used car salesman.
Yeah.
And
I really like, oh, we didn't even talk. I really like Charles's hair in this episode as his dad. Like, mm-hmm. it was a pretty great look too. So funny.
Yeah.
What are the other, I mean, we already were like, where's Mary? I don't have an answer for that.
I mean, probably the same place Hal is, just like is like an ancillary character.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's why she got out of town or whatever,
mm-hmm.
because she's not like tied to this like deep nightmare.
Yeah, like all the other parents are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to see her, but that's okay.
Well, I also think you can't. How do I put this? You know what young Molly Ringwald looks like, right?
Yeah, of course.
So like throwing someone in there, you'd be like, that's not right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's also basically true of Machen and Luke, but.
Molly Ringwald in 94 too is like not teenage Molly Ringwald.
Yeah. What if they had like an insane budget and they did like what a lot of movies are doing now and they just do like a CGI young version of them? And
yeah. That happened in Grey's Anatomy recently and
it
I
did?
Was like, this doesn't look good.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Have not seen that in years. I think my last questions were kind of like, how did Jughead get so deep into this and are drugs related to people getting into the game? And I kind of already touched on my weird theory there, but.
Yeah. I don't think Jughead would like knowingly do drugs.
No. Although he was like super eager to drink the Kool-Aid the other week, so, the fresh aid, sorry.
Yeah, and then like as always, like why aren't him and Betty just like talking?
Mm-hmm.
Like why is he like, yeah, I got really into playing the game without letting you know? Like what?
Right, and she, I mean, yeah, she had sat with her mom for a while as she told her this story, but I can't believe she wouldn't have called him immediately. It's
yeah.
one of those situations where it's like usually these people are good at keeping each other in the loop, but then it's like, why did we? How did this happen?
They. So often don't keep each other in the loop
yeah.
to an extent that's like, guys, like, oh, you had a seizure? Like that
yeah.
kind of thing where it's like a simple text.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes they're good at it. Sometimes they aren't.
I mean, it is a good model in the sense of like, you can live separate lives as a teenage relationship. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, versus
right.
being like super like up on each other's business. Yeah. But sometimes like for the sake of the story, it's like, guys, come on. Like they would have told each other.
Yeah, I would think
I had
so.
The craziest talk with my mom. Tell you about it later. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. And Jughead's like, sorry, I can't. I'm way deep on G&G right now. And then Betty would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It should have happened. Mm-hmm. I've got the name game in here, as we always
name
do.
Name game.
Before we get into a few brief fan theories. But the name game next week's episode is called The Great Escape, which is the classic 63 World War II movie about a group of prisoners of war escaping from a Nazi camp.
I have actually read the description for next week's episode. It is two lines.
Oh yeah.
But basically it's like Veronica, after not hearing from Archie for a few weeks, tries to break him out of prison, like works on a plan to get him out.
So it's more coming from the outside than it is Archie and his gang trying to get out.
I think so. I mean, maybe they're also involved, you know, mm-hmm. now that she's like visiting him with like a blonde wig or however that's, is that happening still? Or is that the beginning? Or now is he like not talking to her anymore?
I don't know. I guess you're right. Maybe he's not allowed to see anyone. He's not allowed to see his dad. So,
yeah. So and then also, Betty's going to try to break Jughead of his like insane dependence.
I guess.
I was
going to say from the other week, someone had brought this up, how funny it is that Archie sees that pickaxe in Mad Dog's book. And Archie tells those guys, he's like, he kept it as a symbol, as a reminder that there's a better life outside. And it's like, no, he kept the pickaxe because it's a tool that can help him break out mm-hmm. if he needs to.
It's a pretty small pickaxe.
Yeah. It's a very Archie thing to be like, this represents so much.
Here is the official description.
Mm.
After weeks go by with no contact from Archie, Veronica devises a dangerous plan to break him out of juvie. Meanwhile, when Betty learns that Jughead is taking their investigation into griffins and gargoyles a step too far, she finds herself in a race against the clock to save him.
Well, and as always, by the time you guys are hearing this episode, there will be a little teaser trailer that maybe reveals a little bit more, but...
Yeah, I suspect.
It's going to be a big prison breakout attempt. I wonder how heisty it'll feel. I wonder if, like, Veronica's going to have her little, like, crew...
Like sexy black outfits.
Yeah.
We'd probably love that. Pretty
you know
much.
What? I've seen a promo image from the episode where Kevin is like dressed up in like a delivery boy outfit. And I'm like, oh my God, are they going to have him like.
Are they going to have Kevin like muck up the problem again?
Yeah. I'm down. That sounds fun. Bring it on.
Yeah. I mean, why haven't the serpents tried to get like Joaquin and everybody out?
Yeah. I mean, right. Because we know.
Go work with the serpents.
We know that they can talk to. Like FP and Jug went to go visit the one, I forget what his name was, the one guy in prison last season. So it mm-hmm. could happen again. There's always constantly theories out there, but I was trying to find some from our Twitter followers. And I asked earlier in the week specifically about theories about this episode. And one of my favorites at Boston Believers theory is that Hiram had a Tamagotchi. Which?
Ooh, gosh, it's tough.
We don't really see.
Did Hiram have a Tamagotchi? I don't know if it would be Hiram or if we'd be talking about who do you think would be most likely out of the characters that we now know to have a Tamagotchi?
I don't know.
Maybe Hermione?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, we're supposed to like see her character as kind of like a... Well,
like
she was the
Catholic schoolgirl.
Yeah,
basically.
Like kind of Catholic like innocent, do-gooder. Dorky with her glasses, which was cute.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. But also, Tamagotchi was probably not until 96, 95, 96.
Okay, Cameron,
right?
Let's find out how to get.
Time to go in our pop culture fact corner.
Do you, Tamagotchi, guys, hit me with the details right on the.
Yeah, that's what
I
you want to Google
right
search.
Right on the front of the Google
I want
page.
Auto
I don't need to click through to Wikipedia. really released by Bandai in 96 in Japan and 97 in the rest of the world.
Okay.
So Hiram could have had a Tamagotchi later.
In college?
Yeah.
Riverdale
freshman year
college
of college.
Year. Yeah, uh-huh.
He could have, like, gotten one from Japan, like, for Hermione. Like, get babe, check this out. I got this for you. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he'd have
I provide.
It, like, brought in. And she's like, you're so cool.
Through, like, the... What's the name of the Japanese, like, of the Yakuza?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Through, like, Papa Noodles or whatever, mm-hmm. like, member of the Japanese Yakuza.
I mean, it would be Papa Noodles. It's really good. I'm going to start writing this
There's
fanfic.
Probably a better name, but I don't know, something Udon. Yeah.
Papa Udon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Papa Poutine, gone too soon. Another fan theory, briefly, speaking of people with great names, Tanya Jo Riley said, we're going to see some of Dr. Curdle Sr. to confirm my theory that Dr. Curdle Jr. is the Gargoyle King. Did not, but obviously was mentioned by name.
He was on the phone.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And that's what started the investigation. I don't know. I think that's an interesting thing to keep a pin in, but that in my mind, that was still just Curdle Jr.'s way of telling us that his dad had dealt with that in the past. And that was the hint that like something has happened previously.
Speaking of hints, do you have theories about the symbols?
I like, sure do.
Okay. On the bottom of the cups was like one of the symbols. Mm-hmm. What about the other two? Like, where did those come from?
Well, weirdly enough, I was watching Sabrina. Mm-hmm. I was not weird that I was watching Sabrina, but this theory, this popped in my head when I was watching that. And there's a chalkboard at the Academy of Unseen Arts in the background of a scene. And some of the symbols look close to Gargoyle King symbols.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh yeah, these... They probably didn't just come up with these symbols. This is the show that loves to reference other things. I'm sure there are some, there's something out there that these symbols are coming from.
Yeah.
I honestly couldn't even tell you what I looked up, but I found out that there's like these interpretations of like the Lovecraftian alphabet, like H.P. Lovecraft, you know, the old horror writer, where it has all these symbols. And I tweeted the grid that shows what symbol corresponds to which letter.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you map that out over the sketches that are on the billboard in town, the things that were in Dilton's back, I think it's the letters TGH, which as I'm translating it, I have like TG. I was like, oh, it's going to be K, and it's just the Gargoyle King. That's his mark. But TGH is weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It's confusing.
But I kind of want to keep an eye out for it because, yeah, those symbols did pop up a lot. And specifically, that was the H on the bottom of those chalices.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I have no idea. But I was just like happy to be like, oh, yeah. And of course, Lovecraft was referenced last season because of the shipment that Archie and Jughead had to drop off in Greendale, that old wheelchair lady that wasn't Anna Rose, had like Lovecraft's name on it. Or it had a, oh, God, I'm getting really deep into this, but it's all connected.
It's all connected.
I mean, yeah. Roberto did say in an interview that whatever happened in that Tales from the Dark Side episode was supposed to be a big hint at where this scene was headed.
Oh.
So I think that we're supposed to take that kind of literally then.
I like your digging into this. I like how you're taking it much more seriously.
I'm like frothing
at
the mouth
else.
Right now. We should take a quick break. I'm like going crazy. I'm scaring myself. Okay. See, I became Jughead. Damn. Anyway.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. We are going to talk about The Blue and Gold, which is our favorite Riverdale adjacent moments of the week from the cast, the fans, and beyond, basically online and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron, what is yours?
Mine was just this series of Instagram posts from KJ, who, like, I don't know. I think, like, at the beginning of the show, specifically because I didn't like the Archie plotline, I was just like, oh, this guy. But he is, like, just really won me over. He's really funny. And he had posted this old photo of him from, I don't know, he was maybe 10 at the time. And it's this really goofy photo. It's captioned, "The real KJ Appa, PS up the crown. If you know, you know."
I think it must be like a rugby thing, like his little pin.
It does look like he has. Yeah. It's definitely a uniform.
Yeah, like a New Zealand-y thing.
And so he had shared that photo. And then I'm assuming Dylan Sprouse must have done this where he edited a more recent photo of KJ at the Teen Choice Awards with his old gap tooth smile.
Because he said, I saw, was it Cole or was it him that commented on that photo and said, like, that photo makes it look like you ate ice cream with your teeth.
Oh.
There's a gajillion comments, so it's hard to go back and find them.
But.
Yeah.
He specifically tagged Dylan Sprouse in the second photo.
Yeah.
And just said, hey, you right to Dylan. And then the third post was the same photo again with the gap tooth on the more modern day picture, but also the old hair. And he said, this is getting out of control.
He looks like Alfred E. Newman there. Do you know what I mean? Like from Mad Magazine. Yeah.
He does. Let's do the adaptation of that with KJ.
Yeah.
As Alfred. Just a lot of fun. I don't know. Just innocent. Like, what, you know, I just lost my mind thinking about these Gargoyle King symbols. So it's nice to draw myself back into the real world with some bad Photoshops.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what my favorite thing is this week. I don't know if I have one. There's something, I mean, Lily Cole was on Colbert last week.
Oh, yeah.
And he, Lily pointed out that he was dressed like the guy from A Nightmare Before Christmas, which I enjoyed. Like
Jack Skellington.
Jack Skellington, yeah. But like, I kind of wanted to like, I always want to like his talk show appearances more than I do. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always just him talking about like, yeah, I had a real crush on Jennifer Aniston when I was on Friends or whatever. I'm like, yeah. Like, give me something else, man. Mm-hmm. Like, your stories are boring. I don't know. I want to like him better.
I mean, he grew up on set, like, I want to know more.
Maybe it's like
that.
He's just like stuck in like when you're on a talk show, like that's what they want to talk about.
It's kind of tough. I think that kind of wraps us up for the week. You still gotta watch, I mean, I'll plug it again, we put out just recently an extra episode about all of Sabrina that I did with Danette.
Will I ever be able to watch television again?
I
did watch
twins.
Half an episode of Real Housewives with Dallas this morning.
Oh.
From a week ago.
So you're saying caught up, sort of.
Yeah, you know, I have priorities.
Uh-huh.
Because it's also stuff I can, like, dip in and out of. Yeah. Like, I can watch 10 minutes at a time. So, you know.
Interesting. See, I don't have priorities, and I spend my free time just watching these shows.
It's not that I don't have priorities. No, it's, like, literally, like, I just want to, like... It's like if I started watching Sabrina, I would be able to watch 15 minutes and then have, like, hear crying and have to run away.
That'd
Do you
really,
know what I mean?
Really tough,
and so then I would just be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I'd never be like coming back to it would be so confusing.
Yeah.
At least that's how I feel. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But
No, of course.
Oh, like watching every episode in like four parts.
It would take forever. I mean, you're like, I don't know. It's funny because I put it all up at once because I do basically want to promote people like binging a season now. And you'd be like, oh, like, it would be better if this ran week to week for you. It'd give you more of a chance to.
Also lately, like, because just work has been a lot because it's like end of the year movie time and TV time. So
yeah,
like I used to be able to watch TV at night, but lately I've just been having to like watch, go see movies and stuff. Whoa, my life is the worst.
Sounds bad.
But you know what I mean? Like it's I haven't really been like still The Good Place from last week. That's like the one show that Andrew and I like actually try and keep up on, but we haven't even watched it yet.
Huh. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I will keep chugging along. I mean, I think I have to uphold my promise to watch that series Elite that's on Netflix,
What's
the Spanish language one. Because people have followed up after we talked about it, that episode, and they're like, yeah, it's amazing. You have to see it. So
I keep hearing about Love Island. Like,
oh, God.
We talked about Love Island, unrelated entirely to Riverdale. But the idea of that show is like so daunting to me. Like,
I could never.
So much.
Because that literally is every day.
Yeah, there's no way.
How do you watch that?
There's no way.
Well, we don't have to get into it now, but I think that kind of opens up a whole other can of worms where it's like shows want to like be this like live experiential thing because that's the only way that like you get people
viewers.
To talk about it.
Yeah.
And Love Island's capitalizing on that because like you have to tune in or you're behind.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyways, television.
Thanks for tuning in
this
for
has been
our
television
show.
Talk.
If you haven't listened, you could get easily behind on my and Cameron's witty repartee. guys, thank you so much for listening. Dial M for Maple is a production of Onion Inc. And our theme music is by Stuart Wood. And our engineer is Stephen Halliger. Our producer is Leo Steltenpool. And our creative director down at the end of the table is Leo Garcia. The show is hosted by me, Mara Egan, and Cameron Sheets. And if you like the show, tell your friends. They won't even have to try that hard to find us. We are basically everywhere that podcasts are podcasted.
True.
You can also follow us on Twitter, the very best Twitter in the world. It's at Dial M for Maple on Twitter. Cameron, thanks. And I will see you next week when Riverdale makes its great escape.
Bye-bye, Bulldogs.